Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ooh-wee, Rick. We are really pumping out the podcast for you this year, aren't we? Another one the second this week. It's back at the Newcastle Stand, and it's Seymour Mace. If you haven't heard of Seymour, you are missing out. Absolutely phenomenal comedian. Very interesting man. This was a lovely podcast. I hope you will enjoy it. Do keep supporting us however you can. You know the ways. Become a badger. Go fasterstripe.com/badges. Come and see a show. richardherring.com/gigs. Just tell your friends about Rahalastapa. Go to Twitter, Facebook, or if you see them in real life, you can say, hey, listen to Rahalastapa, listen to it now, my fan friend, do that. And then they'll say, okay, we will, stop shouting in our faces. Thanks to everyone who has participated and helped us put these out through the Kickstarter campaigns. And we'll probably do another one for the upcoming videos in 2020. I mean, Michael Palin's going to be on one of them. That's not bad, is it? Come on, that's not bad. That's extremely good. Keep up to date, rahalastapa.co.uk. If you become a badger, you get to know about all the guests before everyone else, as well as many other benefits. Sorry about my emails going off. Some of you will think it's your email and be checking your email, and it isn't. It was mine, and I can't be bothered to re-record this. So fuck you all. Fuck every one of you in the arse. Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahalastapa with Seymour Mace.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the stand in Newcastle. Please welcome a man whose life has been disrupted by squirrels. It's Richard Herring. Yo, yo! Hello, Newcastle! Oh yeah, you are better than last week's audience. You're miles better than last week's audience. Welcome, we're in a podcast. Welcome to Richard Herring's Languishing Sub-Time podcast. It's got to come up with some new ideas. So many podcasts out there, you've got to come up, keep it fresh. The idea for the podcast now is me and my guests will be submerged under Newcastle's river and then try to have a conversation, just be made to drink the water there and see how long... whether we drown or are poisoned first. It's one of the two. One of the two. We'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to it. But I was talking to the Angel of the North the other day. He's a big fan of the podcast. When I asked him how much he liked it, he said... Oh, yeah. Realised I couldn't do that joke and have the microphone in my hand at the same time. If you're listening on audio, it was really funny. Anyway, who calls it Rehalastopus? I don't know. That's the thing I catch on. Yeah, the squirrel thing. I parked my car under a tree. This is the problem with living in the country the other day. And we left it for a couple of days. And when I came back, the car was lit. We were about to go out in quite a rush. And the car was covered in squirrel shit. I'm just presuming. I'm not an expert on shit, but it wasn't bird shit. It was like little tiny poos. And I tell you, there was not a hazelnut in every bite. The joke lied to us. It was very unpleasant. And so I had to go to a car wash, and then I was really tired and I didn't drive in the right angle into the car wash and broke the car wash. And that was an hour of my day I was now behind. It was all down to the squirrels. But it did mean that I got to go to the car wash again later. The bloke said, I'll give you another ticket. You'll have to come back later because we have to reset the car wash because I'd driven in too close to the edge. I'm very tired. And I went in with my kids. My son was in there and he was really terrified. He's crying, and I said, what do you think of it afterwards? He's 2 years old. He went, amazing. It was worth it for that. What a wonderful... Thanks, squirrels, for that. Anyway, we're here in Newcastle, and I was looking up online to find out some facts about Newcastle. There was a whole website that had, 50 facts about Newcastle, and every single one of them was shit. It was, so desperate. These are so desperate. And right from the beginning, nothing... The first one, Newcastle Central Station, is the first ever covered train station in the world. Not the first train station, just the first one with a roof. That is not that good. Don't put that at the top. Newcastle has the 10th largest regional airport. That's not worth saying. Newcastle is the 15th most visited UK city by overseas visitors. 15th. So basically, if someone's here for 2 weeks, they're not going to come to see Newcastle. They'll see a different city every day. Newcastle... is this what I've got? I can't read my own writing. Newcastle Town Moor, is that what it's called? Ton Moor? Town Moor is bigger than most parks in London. Genuinely, there's about 50 of these. These are the best ones. This is generally fantastic. The first Greggs was in Newcastle. That is gone. Well, even better, it was there, put there by Ian Greggs, and that is generally true. That is genuinely true. That makes me very happy. The ship Carpathia was the ship that rescued the Titanic survivors was built in Newcastle. That's no good. Best of all, the greatest variety of ginger hair in the world is in Newcastle. There are 47 shades of ginger. No one's turned that into a book, have they? So that's... how you work that out? Different shades of ginger. There's a few in here, there's a few. Right, my guest this week is probably best known for his role as Johnny D. Hellfire in Zombie Women of Satan. That's why we're here tonight, to see him. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome Seymour Mace, ladies and gentlemen. Seymour Mace.
Welcome. Sit down, we're sorry. Please come home. Oh.
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Good. We've both gone for knitwear in this quite warm room.
Yeah.
That's kind of a Starsky. That's like Starsky from Starsky and Hutch. Too old reference for this audience.
Very nice of you to say that. Because he used to get out the swimming pool, didn't he? And the opening titles, and it was sopping wet.
Yeah.
And he had a belt on it. Oh, I ain't got a belt.
No belt.
But it is similar.
It is. It's nice.
In the vein of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Paul Michael Glazer. The kids are too young these days. Well, that's the problem.
Yeah, but everyone knows Starsky and Hutch, don't they?
They remember the terrible film with Ben Affleck and probably Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson and, yeah.
Yeah, was it about two of them? Ben Stiller. I went to see that. I went to see that film on a date, and I went to in Leicester Square. And I went to Garfunkel's first, and then saw Starsky and Hutch. And I can promise you that is the worst combination. The most terrible food followed by the most terrible film.
Starsky and Hutch were in it though.
They were. They were in it
at the end.
Were they? Yeah, the real ones.
Yeah, the real ones.
Don't remember.
They were in it. Should have killed them.
So you tell us about your film career. I've seen the trailer of Zombie Women of Satan.
Oh my God. It's awful.
It's no, it's terrible. Not some fans.
You know what you're talking about. It's a terrible film. The lesson is, if your mate phones you up and says, do you want to be in a zombie film? Yeah. Don't just say yes. There's not even any zombies in it. There isn't. The zombies are women who've been drugged.
Yeah.
I know, now it sounds sinister, doesn't it? It is sinister. It's a horrible, horrible film about women who get drugged and try to escape and get killed.
Okay.
By me and other people. Yeah. And most of them do it topless.
Yeah.
It's a horrible film.
It's sounding better and better
than
more.
It's awful. It's a film that I say to people, because they oh, yeah, and I say, don't watch it. It's a horrible film. Don't watch it. And they say, nah, but no, it's horrible. And they say, yeah, but it's probably so bad, it's good.
Yeah.
Which is a phrase I hate anyway.
Yeah.
I say anything so bad, it's bad.
Yeah.
And then they watch it, and then they get back to me and they say, that was horrible. I had to turn it off after 10 minutes. And I go, I told you it was horrible. And then they have a, you know, low opinion of me because I was fucking in it. And I had to, oh, man. But there was this whole, it was like film, it was this, like, I was basically in a farmyard in Durham fighting these women, right? With some other people. And I had a chainsaw. It was a laugh. Anyway. And so we were filming this, but there was this whole other bit that was being filmed as well, about this family who had trapped the women and what they did to these women in their fucking little dungeony bit.
Right.
And that was awful. It was like having sex with drugged up dead women. Oh, it was horrible, horrible.
I'm going to check it out. So it's disapproval.
I tell you what,
awful.
Like, There's a film festival in London once a year. I think it's called Fright Fest or something like that, where they celebrate horror films and they do give out awards and all that. And in the history of that, Zombie Women of Satan is the only film ever in the worst film category to get all the nominations.
that's an amazing thing. These two guys,
you like love it, don't you?
He's got it.
He's got both of them.
Is it? Yeah, he asked me to do the second one and I knocked it. Is the second one better?
It's just as bad.
Is it?
Okay.
They enjoyed it just as bad. I enjoyed it. It's good if they twitched it round in the second one. It was the men who were the drugged ones and the women.
I don't think the guy didn't have the imagination. The guy wrote it, directed it and starred in it. A guy called Warren Speed, who's awful. Anyway... he couldn't write, direct, or act.
Yeah.
So it was. He was saying to me on set when he had a scene where you were supposed to throw knives at. It was a kind. He played this weird clown, and it was a troupe of like cabaret artists. And there's this bit where he's supposed to do a knife throwing act. And on the day we filmed it, he came out and went, "I don't know how to throw knives." And then he said, what can I do? So I said, just drop the knives and walk off. And so he did that. kept saying, can you come up with stuff? So by the end, we were just taking the piss. And those are the best bits. Horrible, horrible.
Yeah, well, I think horrible. The sales of that are going to go through the roof after this.
Yeah, let's hope not. I don't want to put any money in that. really.
The more
if
you're
going to buy it, buy it second hand.
Okay. Yeah, I don't want a second-hand copy. I can see what this guy looks like. I know what he was buying it for. So, it's quite hard, Seymour, to find that much out about you. There's not much about you on the internet, so we're going to do our finding out on stage. You were born in the UK, but you moved to South Africa when you were young. Is that much true?
It is true. I was very young.
Your dad was a gold miner.
He was a gold miner.
Come
in
on, that's
South
pretty
Africa.
Cool.
It is pretty cool. We moved there in 1970.
Right.
We could emigrate for a tenner to either South Africa or Australia.
Yeah.
And we went to South Africa for some reason, because we're all massive racists. Anyway, I don't know why. We haven't really broached that subject. Anyway. my dad had a job in the gold mines, and there's a language that they speak in the mines called Funny Galora. Because okay. A lot of the people who work in the mines come from loads and loads of different tribal areas, and there's loads of different languages spoken, so they have a unified language called Funny Galora.
Okay.
I can't speak any of it.
Could your dad speak, or could your dad speak?
He could yeah. speak Funny Galora. Yeah. Wow. Sounds Irish, doesn't it?
It does.
Funny Galora.
Yeah. It sounds like a name you'd make up if you were a racist for a language. For a foreign language. I'm speaking Funny Galora. Yeah. For any foreign language. He's speaking Funny Galora. That's just not English. Yeah,
yeah, it's like mumbo jumbo, isn't it? Yeah. It's another version of that, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Gobbledygook.
So your dad manage to sneak out any free gold?
No, but every year they had a thing where they had a bar of gold, and if you could pick it up, you could have it. But you couldn't pick it up. Okay. It wasn't like, because it's something to do with this. It's quite a soft metal. It's very.
They can't get a grip on it.
It's very slippy. So as long as they have it that way up, you can't get hold of it.
Right.
But if you flipped it over, then.
That's the trick. I remember Johnny Ball on, Ball yeah. Knows It All.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I have a memory of him saying that he had a gold bar and he said it was on his back.
Right.
He was carrying it on his back, and he said, if this was a real gold bar, I couldn't carry it on my back. It would break my back. But then he went, but this is a real bar of gold. That's my memory of watching Johnny Ball. I was confused at the time. I met Johnny Ball, and I said, what was that? Do you remember when you had that bar of gold on your back? Yeah. And then you said, he said, no, I never did that.
So do you think you dreamt that?
I don't know if I dreamt it or whether he just did it and then has forgotten.
Denied it? Or
yeah, just
willfully
like...
Willfully denied it?
I think maybe he broke... Maybe he killed... The original Johnny Ball was killed.
Or maybe, gold in his maybe he kept the gold.
Yeah, and walked out with it.
And then said, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, we'll what gold? Know. Yeah.
That's what I'd do if I worked in the gold mine. You just need to put a little bit in your pocket every day.
Yeah, like Johnny Cash in that song.
Oh, yeah.
His car.
Yeah. Did they check for? Was your dad's job to check people to make sure they didn't steal gold? It's good. And what brought you back to? What brought you back to? Not having to go to your dad.
Yeah. sounds like it.
Yeah, it sounded a bit like it. I was just trying to run away with an idea and thought, oh, that's come out quite rude. Let's change the subject. What brought you back? Was it your dad stealing the gold?
They just got bored, homesick, whatever. And I didn't have any, say in the matter.
You were tiny, tiny still all this time.
Yeah, yeah. I was only, I wasn't even one when we moved there. And I think it was about three when we come back.
Okay. Do you remember anything about...
Vaguely, I remember a birthday party in the back garden.
Okay.
We had a duck. We had a pet duck.
Okay.
That one of the dogs brought home in its mouth one day. But it didn't kill it. It brought home like a puppy. And then this duck grew up thinking it was a dog. And used to chase the other dogs around.
Yeah.
And used to drink your tea, put your tea down.
You remember?
Come and drink your tea.
You remember quite a lot about it. You remember a lot about that.
Yeah,
this
I think
dog.
I was meant to live with the duck in the little hutch outside.
And so, what did you were a clown? Was that that's all
I
I've
was
found
a clown
about?
In
was that was
Japan.
That your first? Did you do any other jobs apart from a clown? Tell me about being a clown. But was that?
No, let's go. My first job, I worked on the backstage crew at Butlins in Skegness.
Okay.
I went for a job as a red coat because I had, aspirations to be an actor.
Yeah.
And the man interviewing me said I was too scruffy to be a red coat.
Oh.
Did I want to be part of the stage crew? So I said, yeah, all right. So I did all the stage crew in, the Gaiety Theatre, which was also the cinema, and then in the nightclub. And I worked with luminaries such as Chuckle Brothers. Backstage for the Chuckle Brothers. Little and Large,
God, yes.
Crankies.
Golden Age, double
yeah,
X.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the nicest one out of all of them was Bernie Clifton.
Yeah, everyone said, Caroline Quentin was on, and she used to work as
in dance. She was a dancer in shows, and she said the same thing. Bernie Clifton was the nicest.
Top bloke. The crankers were a bit up themselves. To be fair. But they do an excellent version of Life on Mars by David Bowie.
Yeah, they do.
And the Chuckle Brothers were nice enough, but yeah. You know.
They must have been. The Chuckle Brothers must have been not like wrinkled and old at that point. They must have been quite young.
No, this was late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, they must have been young.
So they were still pretty, fit.
Yeah.
But.
Not. Well, I mean, one of them's.
I didn't fancy them.
One of them's dead.
I mean, fit like. They kept themselves in shape. Like, yeah. I'm comfortable with my own sexuality. I don't appreciate the Chuckle Brothers were fit in their day. And there's a rumour went round that one of them had elephantitis of the legs, and that's why he wears straight leg trousers. But that was never, nobody ever found out. That was the rumour that went round. And it was the one who's dead, so we'll never know.
Okay.
But the Bernie Clifton, lovely fella, he would get us on. There was about six or seven of us on the backstage crew, and he would buy us all drinks in the interval. And then the second half, you do this bit where you got the audience, right, shout out your favourite musical, shout your favourite musical out, I'll do a song from it, and people start shouting out. And then as soon as he shouted out Oklahoma, he would go, hang on, what was that? Some poor woman in the middle. And she'd go, Oklahoma. And he'd go, what? Oklahoma. And he'd go, hang about, put the spotlight on this woman, and she'd get the spot on her. He said, stand up. She'd stand up, and he'd say, what was that? And she'd go, Oklahoma. And he just start laughing and going, God. And then this poor woman standing there like that, even laughing, and he'd go like that, yeah. And one of the stage crew would come on, like eating a sandwich, and he'd go, point at the woman, he'd go, Oklahoma. And we'd have to go, God. And then each one of the stage crew would come on one after one and humiliate this poor woman. It's fucking brilliant. And then he wouldn't do the song. He would just go on and then do it. Next bit was he was doing some dressed as a shake, and there was a fire extinguisher up his thing, so he'd shot loads of stuff out of the bottom of it. Oh, yes.
Because he did the Fringe Edinburgh Fringe a few years ago, I think. Did you go and see him again? Or did
I didn't.
No, I didn't see
him. But I met him again years later. I used to live in Manchester, and I got to know Jimmy Cricket's children, because one of them, Katie Mulgrew, is still a stand-up now, and Frankie Doodle, who's his son, was a stand-up as well initially. He's now a priest. I went to his confirmation. Donna sung at his confirmation. And when I was living in Manchester, got mates with Jimmy. He came and did a couple of gigs at like XS Malarkey, which was a really good night in Manchester. He did a couple of alternative comedy gigs and people really appreciated it, and he became mates. And he invited me along to this thing that he had, which was they met up once a month and had like a proper Sunday lunch, but really old school. And it was him and loads of like 1970s comedians and impressionists and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And he invited me to go along. And I used to go once a month, just sit there and listen to like Johnny Moore and that, all just talk about all the impressions and all, just talk about Eric Morecambe and Tommy Cooper and stuff like that. And
brilliant.
I don't know why I was ever invited. And Graham from the Grumbleweeds used to go as well.
Right.
I got really friendly with Graham from the... Yeah. If you don't know who Graham from the Grumbleweeds is, he's the funny one. And he was a top bloke. So it was weird that I got to join that little world. And the weirdest bloke who turned up one day, what's he called? The bloke who played the copper in Hello, Hello. Arthur Bostrom.
Arthur Bostrom. Yeah. Someone's walked out in disgust. It's just, no, that's too far. How dare they mock the POWs?
And he was a big deal. You can see the others were like, ooh,
Did he carry on speaking in the... That's interesting. Well, do you think that... when I see you and the clips I see you, there's a sort of a little bit of a throwback to that. Era, I think, in the way you look and the way you, the kind of stuff you're doing. So maybe that you recognised that within you, or were you doing stand-up at that point?
Yeah, I was, and I do love, you know, my dad got me into stand-up in the 70s, and Tommy Cooper, Eric Morton was my biggest hero, Eric Morton, in terms of timing and just the presence on stage and how naturally funny he was. He's amazing.
Yeah.
And to be able to hang out, and I think I got on with Jimmy because I appreciate that he's a funny fella.
Yeah.
I mean, and... I think a lot of 70s comedians get a bad rap.
They do for some reason. I don't know what that was. What do you think that was? What do you think they did? I've got no idea. They're just trying to make people laugh, aren't they? What went so wrong for them?
But a lot of them were nice, like, and did their own material as well in the 70s. And people like Mick Miller, he had some brilliant jokes about the... trying to cook an octopus, and I kept putting the tentacles out and turn the gas off. Brilliant joke, you know. But they all just get lumped in with your Bernard Mannins and that, which is a shame.
Jimmy did this podcast when I did Salford a few months ago, so it's out now already. It's definitely, if you're listening at home, it's definitely out. It was out ages ago. He's a top guy. He's still doing comedy, you know. He's interested in getting out there and doing his stuff.
My favourite story, you know, Alfie Joy. Alfie Joy's another comedian now, works on Newcastle Radio as the morning DJ. Yeah. And he was good mates with Jimmy, and Jimmy... said Alfie was getting married, and Jimmy said, I'll tell you what, I'll play the saxophone at your wedding. And Alfie's like, fucking brilliant, you know, so he's had a few things going on. And then it got to the point where Jimmy come out to play the saxophone. He was fucking terrible, couldn't play the saxophone. That was brilliant.
So how did you become a clown? I have to ask about the clowns. So you're a clown in Japan?
I was working for a street theatre company called the Natural Theatre Company. It was based in Bath. And I got a job with them in 1990 at Gateshead Garden Festival because they employed a couple of local people. Gateshead Garden Festival crew in. Who knew? and we did the street theatre there. Naturals, it's not like... circus skills street, it's kind of improvised weird characters and shit like that. And then we got a contract to go to Japan, so we were working in Japan at an amusement park over there, and in the next dressing room along from us were a load of Japanese clowns, and we got on really well with them and became mates. And then our contract finished and they said, oh, why don't you come back, you know, go home, learn to juggle, come back and you can be a clown. So I came home, learned to juggle, learned to do balloon animals, and then went back and was a clown for a few months with them.
Okay.
Which was brilliant.
Yeah.
Pinky Jr. That was my clown name. Pinky Jr. Okay. PJ. And because Pinky was the clown who taught me the most, so they name you. And I've still got my shoes, 10-inch long, black leather, hand stitched by Wayne Scott.
Comes back when she heard about the 10-inch shoes, didn't she? That's the thing. Big shoes.
And it was great. Had makeup. You don't have to put it on an egg in Bognor Regis. That's bullshit.
Okay.
My own makeup.
Anyone who doesn't know about that thinks you're insane. Yeah, you have to put an egg in Bognor Regis. No, I wouldn't have thought you would have to do that. There's a thing where crowns have to put their faces on eggs in Bognor Regis.
Very
much
an English thing.
Yeah.
Not
a Japanese.
Not a worldwide thing.
Are Japanese clowns different than
British clowns?
Well, they're
trained at Clown College Japan, which is an American company, so they were very much American. Style clowns rather than Japanese.
So sort of more clowns. Serial killers than paedophiles.
It's a shame. It's a shame the bad name the clowns have got.
A few rotten apples.
Exactly. And you've got it and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? You could demonise any... If you did a film like It and it was about a plumber, then people began... Suddenly people wouldn't trust plumbers anymore.
Yeah, but, you know, they do like hanging around with kids. So it's... plumbers don't like that. Plumbers keep away from them. So what brought you into... You came back from that and decided to get into stand-up?
I did street theatre with the Naturals all through my 20s, which was really good for me because it was all short-term contract work, so you'd go somewhere for a couple of months and then come back.
Yeah.
And I was a bit of a raver in the 20s as well, so I was on raves off me and on drugs all the time. And then I got bored of that life, And I got bored of living out of a suitcase. I came back to Newcastle. I was doing a sketch thing at the old Hyena Comedy Club in Newcastle, sketch troupe once a month. And then did a course run by Vladimir McTavish as part of the Newcastle Comedy Festival. And he said at the end of that, he said you should write some material over the weekend and come back and do the new act competition on the Monday. So I did that, and then I won the new act competition, which sounds good, but the bloke who got second got a fucking holiday to Amsterdam.
Right.
And I got signed up by a shit agency in less than 6 weeks. So that was that. Then all of a sudden that got me started, and then I was fortunate, after 6 months I won a competition run by Bachelor's Cup of Soup called the Bachelor's Cup of Soup Comedy Challenge. Hey, you're laughing, right? You're laughing. £10,000. I know.
And a lot of soup, I bet.
The only bit of soup related stuff you had to do, they did a group photo of us all in t-shirts,
right?
And they get, look, you could take soup home if you wanted. You didn't have to. It was forced on you. Well, and that was it. And I went, they only ran it 2 years, because I think after the second year they realised that they were just pissing all this money away.
Yeah.
I don't know whose idea it was to do it, but because the final of it, because and it was piss easy. You went to a thing in a pub, and you told a joke, and if there was comedians judging you, and if that joke was won, you got through to the next round, and you won £100. The second round was you'd get up and do 5 minutes. And mine was in front of Simon Donald from The Viz, was one of the judges.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I first met him. And, oh, God. And, and if you won that, you got £1,000.
Right.
So anyone who did stand-up was straight in, because most of the people getting in were just some cunt having a drink and, whoa, yeah. Racist. Oh, no. And then the final was in London, in the pub in London, that Jonathan Ross hosting it, Peter Kay was the closing act, and like fucking Arthur Smith and all these luminaries judging it and all that, and £10,000 top prize, fucking mental. And then I got to go on the Big Breakfast the next day, and I had a line of coke off a celebrity whose name shall remain unsaid. Oh yeah.
Yeah, I reckon I can guess. And so then you're off. That was it. You're away.
And that was it. And that. So I wanted. So when?
What year? What year was?
I could afford to go and do all the open spots and all that kind of stuff that you need to do.
Amazing.
And then I signed with an agency in Liverpool, moved to Manchester, and that was.
So what year was? What year was that you sort of started?
November 6, 2000 was my first gig.
So it's, I mean, the thing nowadays is so it takes so long to like. For a career to kind of prosper, you were nominated for the Edinburgh Comedy Award in 2015.
Yeah,
so that's 15.
That's all it took. Yeah,
15 years into your career.
Yeah,
but there's so much competition now, right? In stand-up.
Well, I will say, like when I got into it, it wasn't. You couldn't do courses. You couldn't do degrees. It wasn't really. It never occurred to me as a career choice.
No,
it's something you kind of fell into, and I did as well, and then. After a few years, it was suddenly like I was stood in the middle of the road with a big fucking spliff in my hand, thinking about, you know, whatever. And all these cunts who had fucking career plans all came and went, whoa, whoa. Sarah Millican used to fucking sleep on my couch. Just sleep on my couch in Manchester when she was first starting out. Good looker, though. Good. So nice to see. So nice to see people doing well. Chris Ramsey on Strictly.
Yeah.
Get in there. So happy. So happy for that. But apparently my consolation is that I'm a comedian's comedian.
Yeah.
Which means poor. That's what that means. Because comedians don't pay to come and see me. They get in for free.
But you do a show in Edinburgh. Have you done? You've done most years in Edinburgh. The last
I've done most
years. Most years. Do you go every year?
Yeah,
doing
every year since I didn't go in 2007. Aside from that, I've been every year since 2003.
Right. Yeah. That's incredible.
And it was nice to finally get some, you know, that award, that nomination in 2015. And then suddenly I made money for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Which is you know, 12 years investment.
Yeah,
of course, it's worth it.
But the stand, they you usually play the stand, right?
Yeah, yeah.
In Edinburgh, and they always do a kind of last day prank on you. Is that does that always happen?
Yeah.
Because
I
was asked to do it this year, but I was home by the time your last show. I went straight home after my last show on the Sunday, and you used to do it on the Monday, wouldn't you?
I remember being up there. I remember somebody saying to me that years ago, it was a tradition on the last day, you know, like the last day of school, that you'd play pranks on the acts, and everybody was up for it. It was a good laugh. And then apparently some acts got a bit up their own arse, or their representatives did, and they started to say, oh, well, you can't do this because then it spoils the show and blah, 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 blah. So I said to them, oh, well, please do it to me. I think it's fucking great. Go for it. Because I think it enhances the show, and if an audience is in a show where that happens, it makes it more special.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't happen every day. And so, yeah, they ran with it. Especially Julia Snedden, who's kind of the one who plans it all and started the ball rolling. She set up a big Facebook group and all that, and we knew nothing about it.
Yeah.
The best one they ever did was on that 2015 year. I did a bit in a show. The show was on a second floor in a circular room with windows that you could open. I didn't use lights. I just had all the windows on because my show was at like 1:30 in the afternoon. So I'd let the sunshine in. And there was a bit in the middle of the show where a clock started to chime, dong, dong. And when that happened, I started to change into a Scrooge outfit. And then as it got to 12, I pretended to have just woken up and I would go, what day is it? Have I still got time? And then I would run over and open the window and lean out the window and just shout at some random person, you there, boy, what day is it today? And then they'd go, either say, fuck off, or, you know, ignore me, or occasionally play along and go, oh, it's Christmas. And I would go, is that goose still available? Here's a shiny penny. Go and take it to Bob Cratchit's house. And then I'll come back and finish off. And then on the last day, and I had no knowledge of this, I did all the lead up to it, and I went over and I opened the window, and all the stuff from the stand, not all of them, you know, artistic licenses, all the stuff from the stand, loads of comedians were all lined up dressed in like Dickensian Christmas gear. And they started singing, We Wish You a Merry Christmas, when I opened the window. And like Tony Law was at the back with a trombone playing. You can't even play the trombone, but like Jimmy Cricket and stuff. And they sang We Wish You a Merry Christmas, and Eleanor Morton was down the front dressed as little Oliver-type character, and she was waiting to go around and get the turkey, but I was so gobsmacked that I didn't want to talk over them. They were expecting me to do the bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just like... And I was, you know, I was touched emotionally,
yeah,
so I didn't say anything. I just, like, laughed and shut the window, and apparently they all thought I was really annoyed. you can see that online if you put in, like, Seymour Mace gets pranked, because Ro Campbell filmed it all on his little handycam, and he filmed the build-up to it as well, so he's going when they're outside the window waiting for me to open the window.
Brilliant.
And yeah.
That's nice, isn't it?
It is fantastic.
That's nicer than having a massive TV career, isn't it? Being loved by...
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd rather have that.
Well, I'd rather have both.
Okay. Yeah, ideally.
It's not one.
I've got neither, so you know, you've at least got one of the two.
But it is very nice, and then that became a tradition, so now they do it every year, and I expect them to do it every year, and I think they feel the weight of responsibility. I think, do you know what I mean? I think, to be fair, they would have liked to have stopped doing it about 2 or 3 years ago, but they don't want to let me down. And I always I always make them aware that
it's hard to top.
It's
that.
One of my favourite things. That
yeah,
we do it every year.
I mean that's a very good. What did they do this year? What was the
this year? They all at the end of the show. Where I talked about earlier the show that I was going to do a show about how I beat depression, but I haven't, so I couldn't.
Right.
And at the start of the show. Should have thought of that. So at the start of the show, that's what I said to the audience, I was going to show about depression, but I couldn't. And then I talked them through what the show was going to be. And at the end, I was going to change out of this caterpillar onesie that I'd been wearing and have like redressed in a butterfly catsuit, and somebody's going to come and put wings on me back. And basically, they then, what I described, they then went away and made these butterfly wings and all that kind of thing. And then at the end of the show, they came on and played the song and put the butterfly wings on, and they're all like putting googly insect things on, bobblers on the people's heads, and then they all just dance around with me when I was singing Nirvana song dressed as a banana. Sing Nirvana dressed as a banana at the end of the show. So yeah, they all just run on and cause chaos and then run off, and then I say to the audience, that doesn't happen every day. And then I get emotional and say how great the stand is and the people who work there.
Yeah.
And then I nearly break down, and then I go on and, you know, don't, because obviously I'm too hard.
And let's face it, they're not that good.
They're not that good. They're amazing.
Well, they stand comedy clubs. We are in a stand comedy club. The best.
We are.
They're
the best.
They are the best.
Yeah.
And best audiences as well.
Yeah, yeah. The staff can be a bit.
Yeah.
But
it's nice. What I like about doing the stand is you get free food. I'd come here for nothing. Don't tell them. I'd literally come here for nothing. I had a chicken burger for free. We had a halloumi in it and everything.
It's massive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I've had one of them.
Don't tell them I wouldn't. I'd do the shows just for the burger.
Yeah.
As long as they don't find that out, we're fine. Well,
much chance of that.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
It's well, you talk about that show was about being anxious and depressed and in real life, and I read you saying that you I've been reading Robin Ince's book, because Robin Ince is coming up very soon as the next guest, and he's got written this great book, I'm a Joke and So Are You, and he's looking at comedians and that what drives comedians and that feeling on stage. So you're talking about being anxious. He sort of writes about this being sort of an anxious and depressed person on stage, and then being on stage is the only place you feel like you can let go and lose yourself on stage. Is that how you feel about being on stage?
Yeah, it's the only place it's where I feel comfortable.
Yeah.
But there's no boundaries on stage. There's no, you can pretty much do what you want, say what you want. You can be perfectly natural. You can feel at home. There's already a convention set up, isn't there, that everybody knows what's going to happen. Like, I'm going to talk, you can laugh, you don't have to laugh. But and there's still communication going on, but it's kind of safe communication. Yeah, I'm in control, and when I'm not on stage, I'm not in control, and you just have to kind of try and fit into society. Society that doesn't see that. See, and I've spoken to Robin about this, and it's about. I'm not in a relationship or anything. Like, I've spent a long time. I lived on my own for a long time, and the job is very solitary job, and your job is to think about things and to kind of pick things apart. And you can get to a point in life where you've picked everything apart, and then you realise that everything is ridiculous. Absolutely everything. Everything we do, everything we say, all our actions, everything's ridiculous. And that can be a really negative thing if you look at it from a negative view. You say, well, if everything's ridiculous, then what's the point in anything? And that can bring you down. And I've spoken to I remember chatting to Robin about this, and he said he has a similar thing where but he celebrates the ridiculousness. He loves the ridiculousness, which is a brilliant way to see it. And that, for me, that is what depression is. It's just like a switch that you switch from positive to negative. And there's not a lot in my life that would have to change for me to not be depressed.
Yeah.
Just to see my life in a positive light would make me happier. And that's what I'm kind of constantly working on.
But you can do it on stage, but you fit...
On stage, I could spend all my time on stage.
Yeah.
I remember when I saw The Truman Show, and I was really... Because I knew what was coming straight away. And now, because I'd thought of that about my life for years. I used to think when I was at school, I used to think that my life, there would be a point in my life where everyone would turn around and say, it was a big joke and we all hate you. Yeah. And we hate you that much that we've pretended for 21 years to like you just so that it would be even worse when we turn around.
I mean, for that to have happened, they must have just instantaneously hated you. Like, if they met you, they hated you, go, right. Let's all get together while he's not here. Let's set up this thing for the next 20 years. I mean, it would be quite a compliment to be hated that quickly by everybody in the world. Yeah. Anybody, you know, that is, it's a common, you know, I think when I was a kid, you start thinking everyone else is a robot. It's a common thing, thinking, because it makes sense because you, psychologically, it makes sense because you only know yourself. You can't be sure that anyone else is who they say they are or what they say they are. You don't know for sure what's going on with anybody else. It's interesting that to go into comedy from that, and I completely get it as well. I feel like I'm a different person on stage than I think most comedians will feel that, but it is that feeling like more alive, and that's what I mean. Robin talks about losing yourself, and I've always found it very difficult to lose myself in anything other than comedy. But comedy I can, and even then sometimes, do you ever get that if you know a show really well, then that kind of the losing yourself encroaches and you sort of start getting the voices in your head trying to trip you up and do you have
occasionally,
that?
I never really know shows that well, so okay. I try and not prepare too much.
Yeah,
and then my shows never run for very long, so
okay.
I never get the chance to get bored.
Oh, you're lucky. I was talking to Mike Wozniak about this, but at one tour, I started having a voice in my head going, "What if you forget how to breathe?" what if you forget like really nasty, kind of demonic voice, basically. What if you forget to breathe? What if you forget how to speak? What if you just suddenly forget how language works? And you're in the middle of quite a complicated routine that you know so well that you can be thinking about something totally different. Yeah. But there's that kind of other world voice encroaching on this safe space.
It doesn't happen to me, really. I don't like the circuit anymore. I've fallen out of love with the circuit. I'm stopping doing that. Because I just get far too anxious before the gig, and I always assume that the gig's going to be shit, and it normally isn't, but sometimes it is, and when it is, then that confirms all my fears, obviously.
Yeah.
And I just can't be bothered anymore to humour people. I can't be bothered to drive 3.5 hours to Birmingham to fucking humour a load of cunts who I wouldn't fucking pass the time of day with. Yeah. And if I turned up and, you know, tried and went, say, hey, lad, should we all go for a drink? They were going, fuck off.
Yeah.
I just can't do that anymore. Yeah. And I got to a stage where I think, nobody should have to work in an aggressive environment, and I'm no different than anybody else. So fuck that.
Yeah.
The shows that I love now, I've done my material too much. I mean, it's nice when it works and people appreciate it, but the things that I love to do are stuff like this. Where you're just coming up with stuff,
you're
just making stuff up. I do a show here once a month with other local comedians where we just make stuff up. And it's a shame that making stuff up has become a bit wanky because it's basically improvisation, and improvisation's got a bad name.
Yeah.
So if you can't call anything improv and have people turn up and think it's going to be anything other than a load of wankers... pretending that they're making stuff up, then they're not fucking making up. Shout out a politician. Donald Trump. Fucking hell, nobody said that one before. really? But I like genuine. I think the best comedy is when you get funny people and just let them be funny.
Yeah.
I think that's the most entertaining. That's the best. And I think if you're a genuinely funny person, the first time you say something is generally the funniest that it's ever going to be. So then if you keep saying that after and after, then it's always going to lose it a little bit each time. So why not? I would much rather be a comedian who just fucking makes stuff up every time.
Yeah.
I did a show once about where I just got people to write something on a bit of paper and put it in a box because I got to Edinburgh and I had a show written and then I lost all confidence in the show and couldn't fucking do it. So I had to, and it was a week to go. So I just thought I'd get people to write something on a bit of paper and then put it in a box and I'll take the paper at the box and that'll be the show. And it worked really well. And it wasn't something I would have ever done because I didn't have the balls to do it, but the fact I was forced to do it was really great and I really enjoyed that process. But that's not something you can do on the circuit because, you know, if the promoters hear that you're doing that, then they say, no, can you do your fucking Midnight Train to Georgia dance bit?
But your stuff's quite alternative, I think, even for, you know, if you're doing that in clubs, it's going to confuse some people. And I mean, there's plenty of gags and there's plenty of observations in there, but there's quite a lot of weirdness and
silly. I do enjoy gigs when you say, whenever I gig here, whenever I do a weekend here, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you know, 99% of the time it's lovely, it's great. And I love doing those gigs because you've got the communication going with the audience. But I can't turn gigs around anymore. If I do a gig now and it's horrible and they hate me, I'm just like, I can't be fucking bothered to work on this. Because, you know, if I met you in life, I would just leave at this point. But I'm contractually obliged to stay. But I don't want to.
I mean, I feel like that about Newcastle, so, you know, it's... And every cunt who comes to the Sound, the worst comedy club in the world. Hey, look, that was a joke. Well, yeah, I've realised I'm staying here tonight. I haven't done any emergency questions really all night. And last week. So I'm going to ask you one that came out. I think this might be quite a good emergency question, but let's see. Who is the most famous person you have ever been in a lift with, like not? That you got in with, that you got, was in there when you were...
Noel Edmonds.
Right, that is good.
And
how was that, being in a lift with Noel Edmonds?
He didn't say much. He's very short.
Yeah.
And if you watch on Deal or No Deal, he has, like, little bits that he walks along, which are like a foot off the ground. And everyone else stands in little holes.
Everyone else is in an empty swimming pool.
And I don't remember much. I always say to people, he had an office on the ground floor because he couldn't reach it, but that didn't happen. But he was genuinely in the lift, but nothing happened. I didn't say anything to him. He didn't
still
say anything
good, though,
to me.
It's exciting, isn't it? Being in a lift
I was surprised at how short he was.
Yeah.
He was the kind that you thought, you know, when you used to be a kid and you'd go on your knees and put your mum's slippers. He looked like he was doing that.
Yeah. I was in a lift with Billy Connolly, and it was in Montreal. And I hate Montreal. Montreal's worse than any other festival we've been to. It's like so business, I'm terrible at any networking and stuff. And I just cringe and go to bed. And then everyone stays at the same hotel. And there was this tiny lift that took you from the ground floor up to the reception, right? So it was just one story lift. I got in and Billy Connolly was in the lift and was funnier for the 20 seconds in that lift than anybody else. I sort of generally just said a few things and it was just literally the funniest thing you've ever seen. Then he got out and we went, it was a one floor lift. That was nice. So I think that's a good question, isn't it? I think everyone's, who's the most famous person you've ever been in a lift with? Oh, fuck, it's fun. It's falling apart. I won't go around the whole room. I might do. I'll go random. Just people all want some. There are some other things we might have time to. We'll see. We've got another 10 minutes, maybe. Those are for kids. Oh, won't I? You're not a kid. Let's see. What is the worst thing a cow has done to you? There's so many to choose from. It feels like flicking through the Rolodex of cow crimes.
A cow's unnerved me and chased me when I was doing the course work with my dad.
Yeah.
But it was in a group. A herd.
I believe that's all right.
Yeah. That's what they call them. They're just the kind of, you know, chases out this. But I don't, they were still quite, I don't want it to sound like I was in more jeopardy than I was.
Yeah.
It wasn't much. But I did have a friend whose car was jumped on by a cow.
Really?
Yeah. And it made the local papers, wow. made the Evening Chronicle.
Was the cow trying to jump over the moon or so? What was going on?
I don't know what it was doing. It was definitely... he was driving along. Yeah. Suddenly, this cow landed on his bonnet.
Fucking hell.
Bang, that was it. Another cow was doing a dare. The other cow was a dog. Go on, Terry, no.
Let's see what else I've got for you. What is the scariest thing that's ever happened to you in a B&B? I'm not just trying to find your scary stories. Do you ever stay in bed and breakfast when you're on the road?
I have stayed in bed and breakfast.
Have you stayed in any creepy ones with dolls? And I've had ones with like loads of dolls.
Not really. I think I stayed in one in London that was horrible, where everything was like chained to the floor and that.
Right, yeah, that's just London.
And
that's yeah. the way things are down there. Because sometimes people from the north come down there, and we have to protect our stuff.
But nothing creepy, really. No. I've always had quite a nice experience in B&Bs. Okay. I don't believe in ghosts and stuff like that.
I was just about to ask if you ever seen a ghost, and that's quite spooky that you would say that.
yeah, ghosts are not.
No ghosts. Never seen a ghost.
No, I've seen them on telly and that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
that doesn't mean they're real.
There's loads of Ghostbusters. If you want to see, watch that. There's loads. Ghostbusters 2. There's something that the woman Ghostbusters. There's something that.
Yeah, well, so you know,
women in a way are the scariest ghosts of all, aren't they?
They are, yeah, they are in my life. My favourite song is about mentioned a ghost. Oh, that's by a Canadian folk singer called okay. Gordon Lightfoot.
Oh yeah, it
rings a bell. If you could read my mind.
Yeah,
check it out.
I will. You just did. And this is one I've been asking recently: is if you could have any one item from any art gallery or museum in the world, and they let you take it home and keep it, is there anything you would like to keep from a museum or an art gallery? It can be anything. You belong to you.
I'd have that half a cow.
Yeah, from Damien Hirst.
See if I can find who's got the other half. Is that a date?
It could be. It could be. If you find the other half,
you know, like
find
when you get them lockets, which are like half a half. Yeah. And you have half and I have half.
But you'll be carrying
and
that cow.
And then one day.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Come round. Oh, no. Turns it's
it was
a different cow.
That jumped on my mate's car. Yeah.
Could be. And let's go. I'll go very. If you could have a finger that could travel through time. I'm not even going to do the other half. What would you do? If your finger can travel forwards, backwards. You can stay in the present if you want, but that's just your finger.
Right.
If you can just poke anything in the past. Your finger goes through into the past or the future. You can still control it and see what's going on, but you can slightly alter fate. What would you do?
Well, that's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Is
there anything you'd like to change in history which could be changed with one finger? Or just that you'd like to do with your finger in time?
Yeah, I might poke... who's the poet who wrote "I Wander Lonely as a Cloud"?
Wordsworth.
I might slap him across the head just as he's writing that.
Got a problem with
daffodils? I don't think clouds are lonely. There's fucking hundreds of them.
Ah, good.
I'm lonely.
Yeah.
I'd love to be a cloud.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't? Somebody said to you, do you want to be a cloud for an hour? Most people would, wouldn't they? Most people.
They would. So look, we're going to... Oh, man. Well, we're going to have to wrap up in a second. It's been lots of fun. Oh, let's stay all night. Yay! There was things I was going to ask you, let's quit. I just want to say that one of your DVDs is available at gofasterstrike.com.
Is it
just one or two?
There's one at the moment called Shit Title, and there's going to be another one coming out of last year's show, which was called Seymour Mace Gets Sucked Off by God.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil the ending.
No.
That's what God said. And so that'll be available up when I've bothered my arse to watch it and tell him yes.
Okay.
It's been filmed, so
So and that's a download DVD. If you want a DVD, if you like DVDs, I've got some DVDs. If you like DVDs, and you do quite a lot. You did a show called Testamental, which was about
It was about the Bible.
I've done stuff about the Bible.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had a great professor in Exeter called Professor Francesca. I thought I was going to be able to do this.
Right.
Stavrakopoulou. I think that's her name. And she's really deeply into the Bible. Was coming up with all the kind of weird shit. Was it because you hadn't read the Bible and then you read the Bible for
Read the Bible. I've read it for sure. And just to see how ridiculous it all was.
Yeah.
And it is.
You consider the most ridiculous thing in the Bible?
Well, I like the story of Job.
Yeah.
It reminded me of the film Trading Places. If you have, like, God and the devil as the two brothers who own the company, and then, like, Eddie Murphy is, like, Job.
Yeah.
Because basically God and the devil have a... The devil turns up and says... And God's like, look at Job, he fucking loves me. And the devil's like, cause he loves you, he's God at all. Sheep, wives... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fucking hell. And then God's like, well, I could take all that off him and he'd still love us. And the devil's like, go on then. And God's like, I will. And the devil's like, right, go on then. And God's like, I fucking will. And
I'll show you the devil.
And then God's like, right, I will then. And then eventually takes everything off Job until Job is left as naked, mad, dribbling fucking idiot by the side of the road, eating rocks. But still believes in God. Right? And God says to the devil, there you go. And gets his tenor.
Yeah.
And then you say to Christians, that's a bit fucking harsh, isn't it? And then they go, oh yeah, but then he had a good life after that. And that's no fucking justification, is it? It's like me keeping some cunt locked in my cellar and treating him like shit for a year. And then saying, well, here's 10 grand, have a nice life. I just don't get it. Don't get God.
He's a prick. He's
an arsehole. Yeah. He chilled out a bit once he had a kid. But in the Old Testament, what a cunt.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing people who believe in it don't really read. I mean, it's hard. It's a hard read, but it's...
Yeah, well, most of it is a fucking list of who begat who.
It is. Well, I can tell you all about that.
Right.
I really. Can you do it? I can do it. Let's have a begat off.
No, I fucking didn't. I've forgotten. I've deliberately forgotten who begat who. I just know there's loads of it.
There is loads of. I know it. I learned it all, and I can do it forwards and backwards.
Ah, fuck that.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, but no one can steal that routine. That's what I like about it. And if they can, they can fucking have it.
Yeah.
So, look, we're going to have to wrap up. You're here doing your show.
I'm doing my show on Sunday, the day after tomorrow. I'm doing this year's Edinburgh show. Seymour Mace is my name. Climb up my nose and sit in my brain.
Yeah. And you're going to carry on doing The Fringe every year?
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
I've just started a degree, a drama degree at Northumbria University.
Okay.
So if you see me around the campus... Don't talk to me. I'm struggling as it is. I'm doing that on Sunday. If you want to come to that, it's really funny.
Yeah.
And I'm in it.
It's good. You're going to do more acting? You were in Ideal? Or we didn't even get down to that?
That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
It was fun. I'd love to do more. That's kind of why I'm doing this degree.
Yeah.
It's because I'd rather do acting work. I'm a bit sick of tripping around doing the circuit. But I'm terrible at managing my own career. Mm-hmm. So I figured 3 years of doing a degree was the best way to get myself known as an actor.
Yeah.
I've never been to university or get a student loan, which is more than I make doing stand-up. So Sarah Milligan slept on my couch.
Yeah. Well, man, keep on doing what you're doing. You're a fantastic comedian. Ladies and gentlemen, Seymour Mace! Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'll be upstairs if you want to say hello. Thank you very much.
Listening to Rahulastafar with me, Rich Chang, and my guest, Seymour Mace. Thank you to Pess. The music remains excellent. I'd like to thank everyone at the Stand Newcastle, which, even since last time, I know it's only been a couple of days, but it still continues to be the best stand-up venue that you can hope to perform it at, certainly in the United Kingdom. The Stand Edinburgh, the Stand Glasgow, they're all good ones. Go and watch some comedy there. You will not be disappointed. Thank you to GoFundMe Stripe for having got that one, or the usual crew. I'm indebted to my producer and tour manager, James Hingley. I'm more indebted to the series producer, Ben Walker. And of course, I'm supremely indebted, that's the word, to my executive producer, Colin Anderton. We call him James after James Anderton, the former deputy commissioner of the Manchester Police Force, I want to say, who came out against Clause 28, I think, in about 1987. Might have got those details wrong, but that's his nickname anyway. He loves it. He doesn't mind. He's personally very accepting of the lesbian and gay and bisexual and transgender community. So well done to Colin. I hope so anyway. Otherwise, I'm taking his name off. Yeah, this is a Fast Go Faster Stripe and Sky Potato production. Thanks very much for listening. You know where to go, rahulastafar.co.uk. You can find out lots more about this. Why not become a monthly badger? Look, why not do it? £3 a month, £5 a month if you want, £10 a month if you want, £100 a month if you want. It will just help us make more podcasts. But if you don't want to do that, just please tell your friends about the podcasts. And just by listening to them, they will be helping us out. So spread the word, my friends, my fine friends.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.